Today on Snail Trail 4x4, Tyler gets seasickness in Baja, Jimmy stares at a lady poster, and Ori puts some side-by-side tires on a Geo Metro.
Snail Trail 4x4 is brought to you by Bestline Racing. Bestline Racing has a complete lineup of performance additives for your engine's needs. From our oil additives to our fuel treatments, we have you covered for your hobby, tow rig, race car, or your daily driver. Check the show notes for your Snail Trail 4x4 discount at bestlineracing.com.
Beat time. Welcome one, welcome all to the Snail Trail 4x4 podcast. If you like going off-roading in Toyotas, wrenching on Toyotas, camping in Toyotas, and maybe even poking a little bit of fun at Toyotas, and of course, burning some rubber off of some Tundra tires, then this is definitely the podcast for you. Welcome, ladies and germs. This is episode 140. And I am here in the recording studio with my good buddy, Jimmy. Jimmy, how are you? Nothing. You're really not going to talk today? Okay, fine. He's giving me the shake of the head and pointing a finger. So, okay then. Congratulations there, buddy. Welcome to Nojimber. This is the first episode of November. Hopefully you guys are all going out and voting in a couple of days here, today, tomorrow, whatever it is. And happy birthday to my good buddy, Jimmy. Mr. 40 years old. You're getting old, man. Nothing? Okay, fine. I'm trying to get him to talk, you guys. We'll get him there eventually. This is episode 140. We have a really fun podcast episode for you guys today. Fun interview with Mr. 83, Ricky Bobby, Mr. Ori. So I guess without too much further ado, we could get right on over into it since we don't have the updates for October's giveaway yet, or the snail trail box, the snail box, I guess somebody's coined it now. That is shipping out this week for sure, and the tier is closed. So if you got in, congratulations. You are in for April's gift box. If you did not get in, sorry. Not sorry. Still nothing, Jimmy? Nothing. All right. So, yeah, that's about all we got this month. Make sure you're checking out the November giveaway. It is the Rogue Element Gallon Growler. The Gallon Growler. So it is a vacuum sealed, essentially like a massive hydro flask. This thing is bitching. So check it out. We're going to have that and a couple of other swag items from Rogue Element. We'll be talking a little bit on Thursday's episode this week about what Rogue Element is, what they do, what they are, what they stand for. And so you guys get some input and insight into Rogue Element and the growler there and how that all connects to the off-roading world. So without further ado, let's head right on over into the interview with Mr. 83 Ricky Bobby. So go ahead and grab your drinks, grab the popcorn, grab some pizza, grab some whiskey, grab some beer, and if you're Chuck Norris, grab your White Claw. And we'll be right on back with Mr. 83 Ricky Bobby Ori. Welcome back, ladies and germs. We are sitting here at another undisclosed location. So we're hanging out here with Mr. 83 Ricky Bobby. Yep. From Instagram, the one and only. He's more famous than both of us combined on Instagram.
Oh, by far. Yeah. Don't know how that is, but yeah, people like seeing my junk. So yeah. Not that junk, you know.
Oh, no, that's a joke. Disclaimer.
Disclaimer, not that.
I think they like seeing the tires getting roasted on Tundras.
Yeah, that's fun too. Anything you can burn a tire off is fun, you know. There you
go. We'll talk about that in a little bit here. So your name's Ori.
Yep.
Ori, say hi to everybody.
Hi, how's it going? Internet world or YouTube? YouTube podcast world out there.
Everybody out there, yeah. So cool. You do a lot of really cool, I would almost put you in like a category of a fabricator. You're not, yes, not necessarily a mechanic. You're not necessarily a welder. You're a fabricator. You do everything.
Yeah. I like to do a little bit of everything.
Yeah.
It's hard. I don't like focusing so much on just one aspect. I like everything. I can't just build a car and just do one part. It has to be all of it, suspension, engine, mm-hmm, wiring. I like doing all of it.
The really cool thing that I was astonished with, and I talked with Jimmy about it, the first time we came over and dropped off the 4Runner for the 3-4 swap, which is why we're here today, picking, mm-hmm, it all up. But we came by and you didn't just have off-roading stuff. You're working on kind of a track car build. You have a drift car. You've got a sand car. You've got your ship boxes. You've got your Tacoma, yeah, that's built up for a lot of really cool stuff.
Were the ship boxes the XJs?
Yeah, that's okay. Their name, right?
They're dumpsters, ship boxes, exactly. However you want to put it, you know. My wife calls them something else I won't mention on here.
Nice. So it's funny, not funny, it's really cool because a lot of times you come over and you see people that are, you know, doing work on people's vehicles and they usually have a focus. Like they're usually focused on rock crawling or they're focused on go fast desert stuff or they're focused on building just a really badass drift car. They're focused on LS swaps, whatever it is. And you do all of the above and more.
Yeah.
And that's what's really cool about coming over here and seeing all the little little goodies, yeah, you got around the
my project sitting around.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I don't know if it's just my OCD not being able to focus on one thing or yeah, the fact that I just love so many of different aspects of the car culture, like lowered, lifted, fast, jumping, you know, uh-huh, all of it. And then custom builds are part of it. And I've just always wanted to do that kind of stuff when I was younger, and I just kept gravitating more and more towards it and then finally jumped in just randomly and it got crazy from there.
Yeah. That's when the fun started.
Yeah, basically.
So let's talk a little bit about, we're going to talk about the 4Runner later. I want to go to, you hit it right on, is when you were little, you always kind of wanted to do stuff like this.
Yeah.
How did that start? Like, how do you go from a kid and you're just like, you know what? Fuck it. When I get older, I want to just do anything and everything with cars.
Dude, it's really hard to figure out what actually triggered that.
Uh-huh.
Like my first word my mom said was car. Like all I did was walk around with little toy monster trucks and cars, Hot Wheels, you know.
Okay.
Smashing them with hammers for one and then see what they're made out of. So, uh-huh.
Sounds curious. Similar to somebody else I know.
Yeah.
Did you try to rebuild them then after?
Yeah. I tried unsuccessfully. Ended up just making a Hot Wheels junkyard, I think. But
nice.
Yeah. I don't really know what made me into it so much. I'm maybe my mom, my family probably, because they're into cars, but they aren't into it the extent I am. So mm-hmm, it's kind of like something that got away on me. I just started.
Now, were they into a specific aspect of cars, or did they kind of have an eclectic view of the car scene like you do?
You know, my mom liked hot rods and stuff, and my stepdad and my dad, they're all into hot rods and muscle cars, but
okay,
as I grew up, it's not something you come across in the woods very often is yeah, a muscle car or anything like you would see on TV, you know, Dukes of Hazzard or something.
Yeah. It's
not something I'd find. And, one day I just ended up out at a river quarry by us with an old neighbor who was teaching me to drive a stick, and I got really good at it and learned how cars could catch air really short after and taught me how to dump the clutch. And
yeah,
it just kept snowballing from there, man. I don't know.
So first lesson.
How old were you at that time?
I got my first car, like the keys to my first car at like 10, because I lived down a dirt road pretty far. And my parents gave me my great grandpa's Nova. And we're like, here, if you want to not walk to the bus stop in the morning, because it's like really freaking cold. I live pretty far in the woods. Uh-huh. And, yeah, so 10 years old, they gave me the keys to a Nova and said, if you could figure it out, you can drive it to the bus stop.
Nice.
And so I sat there with no knowledge, full trial and error, hooking up everything backwards, doing everything wrong for many years before I figured stuff out. My parents kind of let me go. They weren't very helpful. They're not very mm-hmm, mechanically inclined, but they did have a toolbox that I emptied of tools and lost everywhere.
Uh-huh.
So I taught myself, basically, after many years of trial and error.
Nice. Okay. So that was, how old did you say?
10.
10.
10. Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. Wow.
Probably not legal.
Beats me. Well, on private property.
Yeah, technically, maybe.
We'll claim it's private property.
Private property, yeah.
I mean, I was probably driving around when I was 13 or 14 on private property, moving things. Like, my parents would fill the truck up with, you know, yard waste, and I'd drive it out to a burn pile.
Yeah.
You know, things like that. Not down the private property road.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think it was just that both my parents worked early in the morning, and I had to be to the bus stop at a time that didn't work with them having to go to work. So sure. We had also had problems. I lived pretty far in the woods. The neighbor had got chased with a mountain lion when I was a kid.
Oh, wow. Kind of like that video that just came out recently.
Yeah. Kind of scary. She moved away. We were only like 9 or 10 years old, and we used to walk to the bus stop, and it wasn't a big deal.
Yeah.
And then that happened, and all the neighbors were like, yeah, we probably shouldn't let the kids walk to the bus stop in the morning anymore by themselves.
So you ended up picking all the kids up on the way?
Yeah, actually. So it wasn't very probably good. My parents didn't know that, but I was doing burnouts every morning or whatnot and driving my car places it shouldn't go because I was in a Nova down a dirt road doing things.
Do they listen to podcasts?
No, so we're good.
We're good. Okay, we're good. Right.
Don't worry about it. <We're good. laughs> It was a good time, though. A good learning experience. Mm-hmm. It's cool to be a kid at that age and have that kind of freedom.
Okay.
Like, I don't see that happening very often nowadays. People just, oh, here, drive this to the end of the road. I was driving past the neighbors and everybody, people just waved to me. I could barely see over the steering wheel, like sitting on pillowcases and stuff. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Meanwhile, they're like, all right, pull the dogs in. Here comes our Abram coming down the road.
Oh, yeah. No, I had the dogs chase me because they also had a motorcycle at a certain age after that. And I would take the motorcycle and the dogs would chase me and bite me, you know, good old, felt like I was in a Dennis the Menace cartoon getting chased by stuff and then causing trouble for all the neighbors. They really loved the burnouts in the morning and all that stuff. Yeah. It's good.
So you're involved. Let's go into the motorcycle world a little bit.
Yeah.
Cause you're not just in cars. You're also in different types of vehicles in terms of motorcycling as well. So that started shortly after the Nova, it sounds like.
Oh, yeah. I got into the cars or the dirt bikes right after that. I think I was like 12 and got my first dirt bike. And,
okay.
Figured out how to balance that thing and try to not hurt myself every day, but it was
Were
good.
You successful?
Sometimes.
That's questionable.
More often than not.
Yeah, more often than not. I made it to the bus stop most times, you know.
Yeah. How do you define success here?
Right.
I'm still alive.
So. Yeah, ish. Not too into dirt bikes much anymore. I have them. I ride them. I take them out. But I've been more into building my truck and stuff with a cage, a little safer as I'm older.
Yeah.
I learned that I can't take the impacts as well as I used to. Broke my collarbone once many years ago, doing stupid stuff, showing off, and kind of slowed me down after that.
I'm sure it's a great story though.
Yeah, it was pretty dumb. Yeah. Trying to show off, doing a wheelie and, wrecked a dirt bike about 20 miles out in the middle of nowhere.
Nice.
Yeah, and laid there on the side of the road with a broken collarbone while my buddy ran frantically around in circles. It was pretty good. Yeah, it was pretty bad. I just try not to do stupid stuff on motorcycles. I was younger. I like to do a lot of wheelies and drive very recklessly.
So okay. How many vehicles have you had kind of throughout your years of wisdom and experience now?
Oh, dude, there's no way to tell. I was in the hundreds when I was a teenager and I'm 36 now. So
okay.
I have no idea. There's 1,000, 2,000.
Jeez.
I have no idea.
What's been your favorites? What are some highlights throughout the years?
Oh man. Toyotas have grown on me. Obviously I just love Tacomas, Toyota pickups. I've had just some of the best times in them wheeling stuff. Was not much of a Jeep fan till I got the dumpsters. Okay. And now I love them. It's cheap fun is what they are.
Yeah.
The Toyotas, you kind of...
Cheap fun with an inline six.
Yeah, good torque. Yeah, right. And, but I got a price limit. I only spend $300 on a Cherokee. That's nice. The most any of them are ever worth. Uh-huh. I don't care who owns one. I'm sorry. It's $300. Yeah. it's going to blow up on me in like a day. They don't last very long either. It's what I do to them though. Superchargers and turbos only.
Yeah.
And they don't make engines last longer, I learned.
No. Yeah, we went. We just took the 4Runner, which has the 3-4 swap kind of done now. It's all up running. It's working great. And we're on the way back from driving it. And you're like, so when are you doing a supercharger? When are we going to do a supercharger here?
Yeah, oh, you have to now. There's a 3-4 in it. I'm telling you, it's the only way to get the right power out of it. It'll put a smile on your face. Okay. Once you hear it whine.
That's already putting a smile on my face right now. So.
Yeah, it can get bigger.
Okay. Nice. So run me through some of the vehicles you have around here now. And what are their purposes and what do you do with them?
Oh, well, I always got a couple cars that I like buy to fix up just because I like fixing them, and then I'll sell them or something after I get tired of them. Mm-hmm. So there's at least two or three I'll keep for only a few months to maybe a year before I get rid of them, have my fun with them.
Uh-huh.
It's kind of like I just like having owned that car, not so much that I have it still. Checking it off the list. Yeah. So like, the one I got, my favorite one recently, is the Supra. It's not the Fast and the Furious Tokyo Drift Supra, but it is an MK3 Supra. I've always liked them. I just been driving past the same one for 10 years in this one field, and I just had to finally buy it. But that's what happens with me. I see a car for a while, and it's sitting in one spot, and it's usually a Toyota. And I'll go up and knock on your door, and I will try to buy it from you.
So, nice.
That's where that one came from.
We saw that Supra while you had the engine and drivetrain completely out of it. And then again, once you had the engine kind of back in, it was almost hooked up and ready to go. And I was super impressed. For sitting in a field for 10 years, the condition that thing was in, it was nice.
Yeah, it's hard to find them like that. Mm-hmm. It's just, I lucked out that time and found an old school teacher with a car that broke down. And it just happened to be a rare one with a turbo and a 5-speed and a Targa top. So that was just all bonuses. I probably would have bought it even if it was a pile of automatic just to have it. But
yeah,
I'm happy I got it.
Well, those are like the unicorns, right? The unicorn of vehicles, like the grandma owned 94 to 97 FJ80s that you want to find in those. So I've been talking with a few people about how do you find those? I'm like, you don't. It's just completely kind of luck of the draw.
Yeah, they get sprung upon you.
Yeah, and most of the ones you find up here, it's like a dirty old hippie vehicle and it's beat to crap.
Yeah.
I have always been looking for like an FJ80 to try to find the good year of it with the solid axle and the inline six, and they're almost impossible to find for any kind of a deal.
Like, yeah.
And the people that bought them usually maintained them well. They were very expensive when they came out, and the kind of person that buys a Land Cruiser usually has a little bit of money and maintains it. So they're not always the kind of car you're going to find even sitting next to someone's house broke down. Like, they fix them most of the time and they don't die. So it's really hard to find a dead one.
Exactly. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
So that's the Supra.
Mm-hmm.
So you completely tore that whole engine apart, completely rebuilt it from the ground up.
Yeah. It was in pieces when I got it.
Yeah.
Some shop had tore into it for a head gasket issue and then left it in pieces, and the shop shut down and they shipped it back to her house. So it sat for 10 years, not only broke down, but tore apart in pieces. So putting it back together was it was sad. It was a challenge because it was a puzzle that I'd never seen and never touched before. So, and I did not take apart.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Somebody else took it apart and then just piled it all up there. And you're like, all right, where do all these pieces go?
Yeah. And it's a challenge. I enjoy it though. It's cool to have it all together and, you know, another thing I conquered and got it back.
How's that running now?
Overboosting.
So
it's still got a problem, but it's kind of something I expect when I get something like that I'm going to get it together and I'm going to find out why, or something, some real reason why it was parked, or something else that's flawed.
Yeah.
But you never know with something that old. Mm-hmm. And the price I got it for and what I'll sell it for, I'll end up making my money and getting paid for my time, which is it's kind of all about. And then for that car, I'll drive it for a bit and take some pictures and say I had it. And I'm sure my kid will kick me in the ass one day for selling it, kind of thing. You know, like, you had that and it's worth this now? Like I do to my, you know, call them, all the old guys I know. So
what about some of the other vehicles around here? You have a first gen Tundra, right? Or is it second gen?
That's a first gen.
It's a first gen.
Yeah.
It has the 4.7, 4.8?
Yeah, the 4.7 in it.
Uh-huh.
I got that one out of the woods too. Like, I get most of the good finds. It wasn't intended to actually make running. It was just bought for the rear differential. And
okay.
I didn't know if it ran or anything, but I got it for $200. So I figured I'd put some time into it.
And see what you can do.
But it sat upside down in the woods for a couple years.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Okay. And it was just a friend of mine who'd wife wrecked it many years ago, and he swore he was not going to get rid of it. And one day he just decided it was worth just getting out of the backyard. So yeah. I drug it home and just been slapping free parts on it. Uh-huh. Ever since then, my Toyota buddies all, you know, got the free parts. So yeah. Got the hookup there, but it made a great drift truck. I've been amazed with what that motor could take and what the transmission could take. Cause it's got nothing but a welded rear diff and the cat's removed. And it just gets held to the floor for hours, and it just smokes tires off to the rims.
Yeah.
It's been a great vehicle. The best $200 I've spent in years.
Yeah, you have some great videos of out on the drift pad.
Yeah.
Just going at it.
Yeah, the 360s and stuff were fun. And yeah, I wish I didn't break the rear axle shaft. I ended up breaking both the front diff and one of the rear axle shafts. So it was one wheel drive for half the day, but it still managed to kill multiple sets of tires. So it was great.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. What about some other ones? Did you see any rigs around here?
A Geo? Is it a Geo?
Oh yeah, there's a Geo Metro. Uh-huh. That was another one I just couldn't leave alone. Uh-huh. The Geo. Yeah. Guy gave it to me for $100 that I know. And he said it ran, and all I wanted it for was to go do some rally car racing at my buddy's house. But I ended up getting
Metro. Nice.
Yeah. Ended up turning it into a pickup truck Geo and putting some Razor tires on it. And it just sits there now waiting for the next race. I think in November I got a race at a buddy's house. We're going to go destroy it.
And nice.
Yeah. Yeah. Kick its ass. I'd like to do some Gambler 500 stuff, but honestly, they don't live long enough with me to make any kind of a few hundred mile trip. They're not going anywhere but to a private property and destroyed most of the time.
There you go. Do you guys have a wrecking yard at the private properties where like a trophy yard?
He does have a big scrap pile where the trucks sit for a while, but I do have friends at a couple junkyards that are in this county that I just bring them to, and that's also where we pick up a lot of the rally cars that we are just going to destroy because we like to go spend a couple $100 on, we call it rally season. Once it starts raining up here and the dust goes away and the fire hazard's gone, we'll, about five or six of us will all go buy an SUV or two and we'll just have a race to the death on my buddy's property.
Nice.
And yeah, it's
do you guys get
pretty
to,
awesome.
To mod the vehicles at all, or is it you spend
no
your initial thing and the vehicle you get is what you have to
no
do
it's
it.
No rules, no. Man, we'll put my buddy Dalton, he will put a turbocharger on anything. So we got a Malibu that already had a blown head gasket. You know, most people would have written it off. Like it would not make a 20-mile journey anywhere. Like it would only go a couple laps, but he decided it was worth the time to put a turbocharger on it. And he fully did it, running with a blown head gasket, lubricating the turbo with coolant from the overflow oiling system or the water system. And it still went like many hours of rallying with this on. So we do all sorts of mods to them, lifts and tires and skid plates to try to squeeze a little more time or fun out of them.
I heard a great story, kind of the highlighted version of plugging NOS straight into an intake.
Yes.
Trying to just see what would happen, or if you guys could get it started again or something. What was that?
So usually we'll do some stupid stuff at the rally races. It's always at a buddy's property, so they're pretty relaxed. There's no rules or anything. Mm-hmm. And last year we got a tank of nitrous, and I don't know if you've seen dyno pools where like a diesel sitting there and they shoot nitrous into the intake while it's doing a dyno pool. Mm-hmm.
Well, and the whole thing blows up.
Yeah. So we were doing that to a Honda Accord, a nice VTEC V6.
Nice.
And blew the intake manifold off of it. I'm sure 100 something feet in the air. It was great.
That's insane.
That's awesome.
It's good.
One of my favorite around the property, before we get to probably the highlight vehicle, is the big black Ford out there.
Oh yeah.
What year is that guy?
That is a 74.
That's a 74. The body lines on that truck are so like gorgeous. It's just a good looking truck. But what's the heart of the vehicle?
I've swapped a 12 valve out of a 96 Dodge into it and an NV4500. And I've also
done
turbo.
Are you allowed to do that?
Yeah, that's like blasphemy.
It is. It is smog exempt, so yes. And then as of the Ford thing, Ford actually owns Cummins. So it turns around. Yeah, I've actually got a Cummins, or my buddy did, out of a Ford Coca-Cola truck that says Ford all over it.
Wow.
So, and it's in his Ford 74 Ford too.
I think you just made a bunch of people cry. Right
yeah,
now,
I'm sorry.
Right
sorry, but it's the way to go. I like a purist in a way, but sometimes you just go with the better motor.
Yeah.
I had a 429 in it, which Ford guys, everybody loved. It screamed America when you drove it down the road, but 4 miles to the gallon and like the towing capacity it had is nothing near what the 12 valve will do. So
yeah. Well, those 12 valves are like magic. I mean,
oh, yeah.
You can't kill them.
No, and then the amount of power you get out of it with little to no money for parts, it's just turning up the boost and cranking up the P pump.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and you're up 100, 150 horsepower just like that.
Wow.
$0, just some time.
Wow. Can you do that with a 7.3 diesel? Like maybe in a red truck that's out, outside or here?
No. You can do some cheap mods to it, but you'll probably blow a pump or something. I haven't had good luck with Ford 7.3s.
Okay.
I've had a few of them, but just not a good motor for high horsepower building unless you're going straight tractor pull maybe.
Gotcha. Yeah.
One of the reasons I'm pretty much just leaving it stock and it's going to be the tow rig and try to leave it as reliable and stock as possible.
Yeah.
Leave it as is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's smart. The stock ones last forever. As soon as you turn them up, they blow diesel through the injector cups and into your cooling system. And so many other little things that happen that just makes it not fun to work on. Mm-hmm. And there's no room under the hood of a Ford to be screwing with that motor anyway.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, shall we talk about your Tacoma for a little bit?
Oh, we can talk about Tacoma. Everybody likes to hear about the Tacoma.
Yeah, so I think we were trying to save it to last.
Yeah, of course.
That or we could talk about your Nissan.
The Datsun.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I love the Datsun. That's
a 280?
280 ZX, an old turbo car, yeah.
Yeah.
That's the car I've had the longest out of anything. I don't keep cars very long, and for me to have that one for 10 years like I've had it is kind of crazy to me. But sentimental thing. I grew up here. I've had dozens of them, and I was always running amok up and down the canyons doing stupid stuff, speeding everywhere. It was my go-to hooning car, burning out car, racing people car, at least as a teenager. So it's got a sentimental thing to me. It's not the most valuable or the nicest of anything I own, but it's probably the most sentimental besides probably my Tacoma at this point.
Yeah. Nice. So what year is the Tacoma?
Tacoma's an 06.
Okay, so a second gen, so four liter.
Yeah, it's a 4 liter, and it's got the 6-speed manual in it, and I've replaced everything else besides those two things. Actually, I have replaced the transmission too, but that was kind of upgrade, hopefully.
Yeah, there you go.
How much boost are you running in that one?
It only hits about 9 or 10 pounds.
Okay.
That's all I can really squeeze out of the Magnuson supercharger.
Gotcha.
I want more. I'm trying to figure out ways to get more, but it looks like I'm just going to have to build the motor, and I'm going to pull it out and do a stroker kit, make it a 4.6.
Nice.
The whole next stage, it keeps going through stages of me dumping my time and money and love into the thing. So,
well, it looks good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's out there. So you have the 4 liter in it now and the 6-speed manual. What all have you changed out of it then?
Oh, wow.
Let's start at the important part.
Well, we just learned about the two things he hasn't changed.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you can pretty much picture the rest of it has been changed.
Yeah. So the favorite new part I've switched out or added was the supercharger. I got a Magnuson supercharger through URD, actually, and I got their piggyback computer, seventh injector, bigger injectors, all sorts of other little things to accommodate the supercharger and get as much as I can out of it.
Okay.
The smallest pulley you can run on it, all that kind of stuff. And
That
is probably one of my favorite add-ons recently. You know, haven't had to do much to the truck since I originally built it. It's been really strong with the axles and suspension. Mm-hmm. But having to go back every few years and do more tube work and add some more stuff because just things I thought about later and things I wanted to do.
Yeah. What axles are you running under there now?
Right now, it's got a Kingpin Ford Dana 60, a high pinion in the front, and then it's got a 14-bolt HD in the rear.
Okay.
So they're both geared with ARBs, or they have ARBs. I took the ARB out of the rear for a spool for right now, just for burnouts. The ARB gives me problems sometimes, so I like the spool for fun.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that and they're fully trussed chromoly shafts, you know, geared to 538s. Got a lot of time. Kevin at WFO does building the link mounts and all the suspension on it. Mm-hmm. We did it as an R&D vehicle at the beginning when I first brought it there, because I worked at WFO at the time.
Uh-huh.
And so it sat on the lift for a few months while we built frame plates and cross member and designed all these parts for a WFO to have, which they still never release, which is crazy. Yeah, you can get some of them if you bug them, but super hard to get them.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I guess we'll have to wait, because right now the popular, I don't want to say the popular vehicle, but the popular Toyota to do solid axles on is the first gen Tacomas.
Yeah.
So I would give it another... I don't know, 7 years, 5 to 7 years before the second gens really start becoming popular for those. And that's when WFO is going to release them all.
Yeah, they will. I think they've only done a handful since we designed most of the parts. It was going to be a leaf spring truck, and I was just going to run Devers in the rear and leave the bed. And somehow we ended up cutting off the back of the frame while it was on the lift and just went like full crazy with it and decided.
Somebody was sitting around that day and was like, you know what we could do?
Yeah.
If we're just looking right here, we can cut this here and here and here and then put a whole new bed on the back.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, that was Kevin, I think. Yeah. But,
sounds like something he would do.
Yeah, he wanted to build some trailing arms, and that's where the trailing arm design came from WFO. So we used that truck to design that and the cross member and frame plates, all sorts of little things. And
wow.
Yeah, it kind of went a little crazy. It wasn't supposed to be like it was. Uh-huh. It was supposed to be a lot milder, and it just snowballed this, like, all my toys.
So what are you running in the suspension now? If you're not running leaf springs and Devers and everything, what's going on under there?
So it's running King coilovers and bypasses front rear. Okay. I've got 12s in the front with triple bypasses. So it's a 2.5 coilover with a reservoir.
Wow.
And then a 2.5 triple bypass. And the rear has got 14-inch coilovers, 2.5 reservoir, and then the bypasses are 16-inch in the rear. But that's just how it works with the trailing arm for the travel, because one's in front of the other.
Yeah.
So it gets like 21 inches of travel in the rear, of vertical, just up and down droop. And the front's, you know, only 12 because it's a 1-to-1, but it's a little different than trying to measure like an IFS car for travel, because it does articulate completely different, and it has much, much more articulation.
Mm-hmm.
So when I'm going through like whoops fast or in the desert, you just have to hit stuff a little bit different. Instead of straight on, you hit it a little sideways because it has a more articulative.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, okay. It's a little bit different. So rallying a solid axle truck that's built like that is a little different when you're trying to do 80 miles an hour through, you know, pretty deep whoops and stuff.
Yeah.
So what is, do you have a like a ratio, or is there, do you know the numbers for up travel compared to down travel?
It's pretty much even in the front. It's about 5.5, almost 6 inches up travel in the front, and then 6 in the rear. But because the truck is so soft and floats, it really depends on how I park it, how I gas it. The front end lifts and drops real fast depending on what you're doing. So
nice.
Interesting.
Is it a 3-link in the front?
It is a 3-link in the front, with a track bar or panhard, whatever you want to call it. That was all custom with all the mounts we did at WFO. It's really hard to snake it up in there. The frame's been chopped and plated in so many different ways to clearance for things. And it's really, really tight in there, to say that much.
Definitely.
Nice. So let's talk a little bit. So you were doing a lot of work of WFO.
Yeah.
And then you kind of just started, you know, doing stuff here.
Yeah.
And having a good time. And so everything that you do here out of your shop, and it's, you know, you do everything. It's a lot of, it's really cool, the stuff that you're doing. Like, we're sitting here next to a couple of Dana 60s and a pile of tires and parts.
Yeah,
coilovers and stuff that you're going to be doing and some work for here. But I just think it's fascinating. Everything that you work on is it's just right here.
Yeah, in my shop. Yeah. No, it's kind of a small space. It's not very small. I've had worse. I used to live out in the woods and have to work in the dirt. So I'm really appreciative of having this place and being able to do this. But I do like doing it. Like, I couldn't continue working at WFO anymore at the rate I was doing it. It was getting a little overkill. I do a lot of LS swaps and solid axles when I was there. And every kind of swap, not just an LS. Put a manual in an automatic in a manual, a different automatic in an automatic, a Corvette motor in a Jeep, a whatever motor and whatever. So it was really fun working there, and I did learn a lot working there.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very good shop, and they do really quality stuff.
Yeah, I know Danny fairly well up there, and they do a lot of. I mean, they're like the sole supplier for a couple of the Ultra 4 race teams that I help out. And so when I was trying to look around, trying to find somebody to do my 3-4 swap, I mean, I called Yoda Man out in Santa Rosa. I called Valley Cruisers down in Stockton Lodi. I called WFO, and like nobody was able to do it. But Danny said, I got just the guy.
Yeah.
He goes, I know just the guy that would, it's going to be the perfect fit for doing your swap.
Yeah.
And that's how I found you and started talking with you about it. And I was like, all right, now that I found the person to do it, I found the guy that can feasibly do this and I think do it really well. That's when I was like, that was finally the final piece to the puzzle.
Yeah, because
you put it together.
You're saying you wanted to do this for a minute. You weren't sure you're going to do this or rebuild the motor and do suspension and try to get it going.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's always tight when you're trying to get this stuff in there and, you know, not go over budget and get it to work, though, still, because you don't want to half-ass things and you want it to work right.
Yeah.
Mainly get all the gauges, all the lights off, everything to work properly. Yeah,
and what's even more difficult is that I wanted it to be able to register and pass smog so that I can still drive it to the trails because I love driving that truck.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And so let's talk a little bit about all the stuff that you had to do. Because I'm surprised after kind of when we showed up and you kind of walked through everything you did, I was like, man, you got all that done in this amount of time? Like, that's impressive.
Yeah, and I've worked
everything
on
like you did.
Quite a few other cars in between, too.
So wow.
I can't just do one build. I wish I could just bring something in and spend the time on it.
Uh-huh.
But being the person that has to run and go get the parts, get the tools, talk to people, do the in between, I've got multiple other cars I got to work on.
Why don't you just video everything too and edit the videos and put them on YouTube?
I wish.
Yeah. And do a podcast.
Yeah.
And run all your social media.
It's so easy, right? It's so easy. No, I try to get as much as I can on Instagram, but it's just hard for me because at the end of the day, I'm tired. And then to get that right picture that does the job justice or to get the right information on there or even have this state of mind to want to write and type stuff down,
it
takes more out of me.
Yeah,
and I'm already trying to think of the next build I'm doing, the long arm on this mega cab next and this straight axle on this Tundra and stuff, so it's never ending. And I'd like to do more of that stuff, but it's really hard.
Yeah,
like I know you guys.
We're right there with you. So cool, let's talk and run through some of the things that you had to do on the 4Runner.
Okay.
So obviously you had to pull out the burned out 22RE and the W56.
So start with that.
Okay.
Being that it's not a stock, it was a 3.0 truck or a 4Runner, but it was switched to an RE through another little complication into the plans because just one of the things I didn't think about was that the transmission is a different distance forward and back. The crossmember is for a 22RE versus a 3.0. So that means the crossmember is different.
Uh-huh.
The driveline length would be different.
Uh-huh.
We could have done that and modified it and moved the engine forward.
Then we're getting new driveline.
Then we need new drivelines, a crossmember. Yeah, there's, you know, that's more time and all that stuff when I'm trying to keep it in a certain time frame to do something. It just makes that harder. So the call was if I'm going to have to massage the inner firewall to clear the exhaust, just because it's only 2 inches, but that seems like a lot when you're in there trying to get
2 inches goes a long way, man.
Oh, yeah.
That's at least what I keep hearing.
Oh, so. Well, for the 3.4 swap, though, it wouldn't be too bad if you started with a 3.4 truck off the bat because the engine would go in. You could take all of the motor mounts off the 3.0 block. Everything bolts to the 3.4. The 3.4 and 3.0 have the same block, the same bolt pattern, the same crankshaft, everything. Mm-hmm. So even though it's a 3.0 in there, or a 3.4 in there, not a 3.0, we used a 3.0 clutch and flywheel.
Okay.
We used the transmission from the 3.0 because it's easier to adapt to the other cases and the starter.
That's all, the R150?
The R150,
yeah.
And it's just easier to come across versus the R151 out of a Tacoma.
Yeah.
So there's those things. The firewall having to be clearance for it being a four cylinder though was probably the hardest thing to have to do because the motor has to come in and out multiple times.
Every I mean, you got to fit it in, see if you need to massage it further, take it back out. Well,
first, fit it in, see if you have to massage it. Find out you have to massage it. Massage it a little bit in the right spots because you can. I've seen people just go at it with a sledgehammer, and you can cave in a firewall way too far. You don't want to do that, and you just want to touch it up in a couple spots. So that was the one problem because it had an RE swapped into it already. The cool thing is, though, Toyota stuff bolts together from all different years.
They're like Legos.
Yeah.
It's That's one of the things we like about Toyotas.
Really cool.
Yeah.
So, like we said, the 3.0 transmission bolts right to the 3.4. The clutch from the 3.0, the flywheel, the throwout bearing, everything goes right onto it.
Yeah.
So,
it's nice.
I ended up using motor mounts from a 3.0 just because of angle positions and having to build you motor mounts anyway because it had an RE in it and none of that stuff bolts to an RE.
Yeah.
So I had to clean all the stuff off the frame and build motor mounts from scratch, basically.
Okay.
That part could be kind of difficult.
Uh-huh.
So there's all those fun little things that keep popping up. Besides that, the wiring from ORS is awesome. We'll say their conversion harness takes a while to get, you know, like 6 weeks plus, depending on when you order it.
Ours took, I think, 8 weeks because they were just, they've got a lot of business right now. People working on projects.
My buddy ordered one too, and it's still not there. So it does take a minute, but totally worth the time. I've done it the other way when we do 3.4s or put these motors in other trucks. Usually we take the whole dash harness, the whole truck harness, put everything from the other car into the other.
And you're taking apart the whole dash inside to put everything back in, connect everything back up.
Yeah.
And that's what I thought we were going to have to be doing. And then you're like, no, call this company, Off-Road Solutions, talk to them. And I was like, okay. And I called them and I was like, I don't, I was just told to call you guys. I'm just figuring we're getting a new, I thought we were going to be putting a new harness in the dash, taking apart the dash. No, we can make a conversion. And I was like, explain to how this works here. And they start explaining it and they're like, okay, so what's going on with your rig? What do you have? And I was like, that's a great question. Because I have a 94 4Runner. Started out as a 3.0, went to a 22 RE, and they're like, oh man, what happened? What got changed when you went to the 22 RE? I was like, that's a great question. I'm not sure.
I've done that before. I've actually had a 3.0 4Runner that was solid axled, same thing. And I put a 22 RE in it, and I took everything from one to the other, and it actually plugs in. You don't have to do any real modifications to any of the harness. Everything pretty much is plug and play.
Yep.
It's a couple of things you have to stretch here and there. And like I showed you the fuel filter thing, 22 REs have a fuel filter on the motor. 3.0s have one back on the frame.
Yeah.
So we lucked out there when we put a 3.4 in it, didn't have to modify it to add a fuel filter.
Nice.
And it was nice that the fuel lines all fit, you know, keeping all the stock parts is definitely very helpful. And having a parts truck to do this, the exact year would be even more ideal.
Yeah.
So if you got... started with the right year truck would be two, because you started with an 02 engine, which meant then we had to get an engine harness and a computer because you want a small get in California, so there's some loopholes.
Yeah.
We had to get the right year, which meant a 98 harness because it has one catalytic converter. So
I gotcha.
That saves us a ton of time and money.
So because after 98, they went to two cats?
Dual cats. Yeah. Pre-cat and a rear cat.
Gotcha.
So that makes more money, more of a pain in the ass. And then... to smog it, you want to have one cat as easy as possible because going through the referee, depending on who you talk to and what referee you're at, they can be very picky. They could be cool. You don't know what's going to happen. So we try to make it as stock as possible. So the cat, having the one cat makes it easy to mount in the right spot because you have to use an ORS downpipe, which changes the exhaust on the 3.4 to come out the stock side of 3.0 would. So that means you're building full exhaust, basically, which is what we did in your case because the RE stuff wouldn't work. A tiny little, like, 1.5 inch, whatever it was.
I think they were 2.25, 2.25 pipe.
Oh, not
two
even.
2-inch pipe?
Not even.
It was less than that?
It was like 1.75 inches. I like put 2.5 on it. So, yeah.
So we had to do exhaust. We had to do the 98 ECU and engine harness.
Yeah.
And I wanted a manual, and my donor truck was an automatic.
Yep. So that meant you definitely had to get a new computer.
So I had to find a new computer, and we had to find a computer from a California computer, a California ECU, not a federal ECU.
Extra stuff to think about when you're doing it, when you want to smog it. It's definitely a lot easier to do this when you don't live in California or you don't have to deal with emissions, because there's a lot of different ways around all this stuff. And you could just piece it together. Like I've done it without the ORS cross pipe and done the exhaust on the side with the transfer case and just route the exhaust all crazy. But then the cat doesn't fit.
You don't need cats.
At least once every 2 years you need it. So. But you want to make it legal in California just to make them happy. It does definitely make it easier on you when you go to smog it later, and every 2 years you don't got to think about it.
Exactly.
Just drive it to the smog shop.
Yeah. And that's what I was really like worried about. I was like, I want to find somebody that can get it to as close to as we can to make the referee happy, get it smogged, and then we don't have to worry about it for 2 years and it's good to go. Once we get that sticker, we're good.
Yeah.
And like everybody I was talking to, they just didn't sound confident. Like they even knew what they had to do.
No,
in order to get it California legal. And I was like, this isn't going to be possible. Like, what the hell am I going to do this before I found you? So
the EVAP system is like the key on 3.4s, and that everything is all one with the motor. The engine harness, the transmission harness, all comes out with the engine. So
yeah,
it's a lot nicer than other model cars where there's a lot of splicing in from the harness at different parts of the car. It'll go to the alternator or whatnot. And the way Toyota's built is just way better.
Nice. So some of the other things you had to do, let's see, we had to rebuild the T-case.
Yep.
And we had to find a different front case.
Yep.
Because mine was a forward shift and we needed a top shift on the front case.
Well, we actually kept your case, but we changed out the shift fork and the top shift assembly. Yeah.
Gotcha.
Basically just tear it all the way down.
Mm-hmm. And then you had to put the 23 spline input into it.
Yep. And then there's a coupler that comes with the adapter to the transmission to couple to that. So there's a bit of adaption to get all that to work, because you had the four-cylinder W56 with a forward shift case, which is common in all the early 90s Toyota four-cylinder vehicles. Yeah. But in the 80s, they all had top shift. So it's like depends on what year you have there. Makes it a little more complicated.
So I'd do that. Let's see. The oil pan. What'd you have to do there?
I use a 3.0 oil pan. There's lots of options for oil pans. Mm-hmm. You can use a T100 oil pan. You can use a two-wheel drive T100 oil pan, which is the ideal pan.
Okay.
This one has the hump in the front, so your steering clears it, your drag link and all that, which is the one you have to have at least.
Yeah.
If you do the one for a T100 with a 3.4, it'll have a rear sump. So it moves everything as far back as possible. Gives you a lot more room for your steering and whatever.
Everything just clears for the up travel and the articulation and everything.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. It's one of those other parts of the puzzle, depending on what suspension you have.
Yeah.
If you're doing a stock 3.0 truck and you're just dropping your 3.4 in, the oil pan, everything from the 3.0 all goes right on the 3.4.
Nice.
You just drop it right in there and it'll clear the IFS diff and the steering. And the on a solid axle, it just adds another piece of the puzzle, another thing you got to think of.
Let's see what else. You had to take out my AC. I was kind of bummed about that.
Yes,
for now, but it'll be good.
Yeah, you can get the lines made and redo them. Just have to go to an AC line manufacturer guy to get those. I don't know anywhere who makes custom ones you can order, so that's a drive to the shop kind of deal, and that's just how it is on all of them. The pump is almost identical, though, from the 22RE to the 3.4, the actual AC pump, besides the fact that the belt is a V-belt and the way the port is on it.
Gotcha.
So it's actually real close to be able to use the stuff from that vehicle.
Okay.
And I don't know if you had a stock 3.4 or 3.0 liter AC pump, if you would be able to just bolt it to the 3.4 and use it with the lines.
Okay.
So another thing that
I did have a Trail Gear power steering pump that didn't quite fit right up, because we had to get a different pulley for it, right?
Yeah, we had to get a different pulley, and I try to keep it a smaller diameter, because these trucks with hydro assist turn very slow anyway. So I was trying to get as much pressure as possible, since I'm changing the pulley, so it had a V belt on it. So we did that, and you have to drill out part of the Trail Gear pump so it slides through the bolt for the fitting on it. And it's really, you can use the part from the old power steering pump that bolts to the bottom for adjustment. So there's no parts to really buy, just time and that pulley.
Gotcha.
So it will mount to a 3.4 with just some time and a drill bit to drill out one hole.
Okay.
So that is a useful part of it.
Yeah, that's
makes it easy.
Yeah. Let's see. What else did we have to go through with it? All my accessories. We got to put all those back, but that's fine.
Yeah, you had a lot of accessories. Amp wires, air compressor, all sorts of stuff. Your winch. It's going to be a tight fit in there again, but
yeah,
that'll be nice once you're all done.
Yeah, it'll be great.
Yeah.
We did take it out on a test drive, and it does run fantastically.
Yeah.
So
I think it sounds good too.
It sounds phenomenal.
Sounds really good.
Yeah. So that's going to be really exciting. I am super pumped for it. I'm going to go take it out on a trail this weekend. It's a Pardo trail. So it's a really, you know, stock 4x4s can get through it. No problem. My RAV4 might be able to get through it. But I need to go up to Lost Lakes as well. I'm going to take a day trip here this week and go up to Lost Lakes and take it up the grades and
Test
the cooling system, put some miles on it, get the EVAP code to get going so we can at least start making sure it's not throwing any codes. But it's I'm excited, dude. This is going to be a lot of fun. I'm pumped.
Yeah, it's nice. You could have almost started with a third gen 4Runner and done this, but it's pretty nice. I do like the smaller body of these 4Runners.
That's what I wanted. I didn't want the bigger body of the third gen.
They are a bit bigger. My first real wheeler was one of those that I built on 1 tons and 40 inch tires, and we trimmed it all out, and it was one of my favorite vehicles. Almost better than my Tacoma on most stuff. I hate to say that, but the leaf sprung 4-cylinder 4Runner would slay some stuff that my Tacoma does not like. But different wheelbase, different hills. You know how that works. If your wheelbase isn't right for a certain hill, it doesn't matter what you do. It's hard.
Have you gotten your Tacoma all twisted up in Windchill 3 yet?
No. It doesn't like 3.
No.
No, I'm still a little bit too nice to it. I've tried backdoor down at Hammers once or so, and I can get up on it, but the way the truck's made, that ledge is a pain in the ass. And I got stuck on my back bumper in that giant hole that's there the first time I tried it.
Okay.
And it was a bit of a pain in the ass. So I haven't had much luck with that, you know, obstacle, but I can do pretty much everything else at Hammers. And it might just be that I'm just being easy on it. I should probably just hammer down and, you know, send it up the hill like everybody else is.
Yeah.
If I'm going to make it up.
Come on, Ricky Bobby.
Yeah, I know. Sometimes I treat it too nice, though. It's something I spend a lot of time. Me and my buddy used to sit there and daydream about the truck we're going to build one day. Mm-hmm. So me and my buddy Dalton would sit there all the time, and we built junkers like my leaf sprung stuff. And what truck would you build? You know, and he says, I want an 04 four-door Tacoma is what he wanted. I'm like, I want the 6-speed, so I want the new one. And probably 5 or 6 years later, we finally both built them and got them. But it was cool that we had sat there and talked about it and all the things we were going to do, and to finally see something that you dreamt of and talked about for so long. And we're like, I'm going to get it one day. It sucked because I sold my really nice tow Dodge, my 4Runner rock crawler, and other things I had to be able to just get the parts to build the Tacoma.
Yeah.
And then all the other time, and it took me years to finish it to where it is even now. It's not even finished still, technically.
They're never finished.
No. It's still got more plans in my head that I haven't got to get to.
Well, I mean, it's for what it, I mean, if I could say there was one vehicle in the area that can really do everything.
Yeah.
I would put your Tacoma up there with almost any other vehicle in Northern California.
Yeah, it does a lot of stuff.
You've jumped it 150 feet?
Like 100 feet or 100 something. Feet. That one's not as far probably as I jumped that truck. But she gets jumped a little bit. Just the time into that truck, though. Yeah. It's hard to just destroy it like I do the Jeeps. The dumpsters are different, you know, when you're only $1,500 into a Cherokee. That's
kind of what we talked a little bit. We were talking about it. I don't remember who was on the episode, but somebody was there with us, and we were talking about how XJs, you can just do some crazy shit with XJs. And I'm like, well, that's just because nobody cares.
That's what it boils down to.
Yeah. Like, when you have $100,000 wrapped into a rig, you're like, I don't want to go get this all twisted up in Windchill 3.
Yeah. But then the beater, like my beater back there, the Toyota, I would care less. You know, I could drag it upside down through Windchill 3 and just have a good day still. But that happens in the Tacoma. It's a little bit like my ego will hurt and my pocketbook too. So
absolutely.
Try not to do that. But the Cherokees, I just drive them different. Like there's just like the Tundra, when you're $200 into something, a neutral drop from redline doesn't sound that bad.
Yeah.
Like you're, but it doesn't sound bad at all. Like you don't hear any of the noise, like whatever.
Yeah.
It worked. It went.
Yeah.
But in that truck, it's just different. I still try to have fun in it, and I do burnouts and donuts. I jump the shit out of it, but it's more something I wanted to drive to trails. I wanted to drive it to King of the Hammers. I wanted to just jump in my truck and go to Alaska or back east. Like I took it to Tennessee through Colorado and down to Texas. I did a 6,000 mile trip through the U.S. in it.
Uh-huh.
And it was a great time. We just put a camper on it. I went and wheeled Mohab, went to the Rockies and did all that.
A camper, or did you have the rooftop tent?
Or the rooftop tent is what I meant. But not a cab. No, no.
I was like, well, you got to put a cab over on that thing and took it around too?
No. Cut holes in the camper for the shocks to go.
Yeah, it goes right there. Bypasses right in. It's good. No, that was what that was more built for. I wanted a race truck when I started building it. And then I realized that I couldn't afford to race it at the same time. When I finally got it done, I'm like, oh, I can't even buy another set of tires and rims if I wanted to.
Yeah.
So I'll just drive this and enjoy it for a while. And the Jeeps are way more fun to just drive into stuff. And the $200 cars, the $100 Geo Metro.
Yeah.
It's just a different kind of fun, I guess.
You can go up and trade some work with Cody Addington for some tires and stuff.
Oh, yeah, I know. Yeah, get some spare stuff from him. Yeah. Oh, I definitely could use some more. But
yeah. Couldn't we all?
Yeah. The 40s are not cheap, that's for sure.
No.
No.
Let's talk a little bit before we kind of start closing up here. You got to be on a really fun TV show, kind of a TV show.
Yeah, like a YouTube series.
YouTube series. That was a full-length show.
Yeah, it was like five shows or five episodes or whatever we did.
And you were up there. You got to go with Trevor.
Yeah.
And be on a team to build a vehicle out of essentially what you guys had a certain budget, or you just had to see what you could have laying around.
They gave us a budget and told us to buy a Craigslist or a used vehicle for between like $3,000 was the budget. They gave us a total that we couldn't break. And so I wasn't going to go at first, and Trevor was looking all over. They found a million Chevys, and that's what they were dead set on. And everyone they showed the TV show guys, they're like, no, it's too nice. Because Trevor gets killer deals. Like he had an 09 for $1,500. Who gets an 09 crew cab Chevy for $1,500?
Trevor. Damn. Yeah, Trevor does.
So they didn't like that. And we were going to destroy that truck, and they weren't okay with it. And so I hunted around on Craigslist for a couple hours and sent them every ad I could find with every Chevy with a 6 liter in it that was 4-wheel drive.
Uh-huh.
And they finally called and got a hold of one of the guys and got him to sell it to him for $3,000. And yeah, so we spent all of our budget on a truck, our cash budget on the truck, where every other team spent like half of that on their truck. So we already went down there with like no cash budget left.
Yeah. And so your entire budget for everything was $3,000, or what was the
truck budget was $3,000.
Gotcha.
And then because it was for the show's Horsepower Wars is the main show that does it. And then it was an off branch called their Junkyard Challenge.
There you go. That's
so
what
they
was.
They do drag racing videos mainly.
Okay.
Where they have drag racing teams show up and do all these little things to run around and choose what car they're going to build and all these games. Well, they didn't do that for us. They just were like, you choose your truck. Cause they're not really off-road people. Yeah. They like off-road. They knew some stuff, but they weren't like any of us were.
Gotcha. Yeah.
So I don't know how they did. They found the other three teams down in SoCal and then somehow Trevor's buddy got Trevor into it, and Trevor talked me into it. And I wasn't sure at first, but I was like, 2 weeks, whatever. We'll go down here. Trevor will pay for a place to stay and we'll bust this thing out and maybe have some fun.
Yeah.
But we ended up like kicking ass and, you know, 7 days to build a truck in the desert. And then we had another week of doing their races that they wanted, you know, truck pull, barrel racing, and then the short course and then the long jump. So it was fun, but it was definitely a crazy experience to go do that. And it was even more fun to just kick everyone's ass. So
yeah,
that was my favorite part of the whole thing.
You guys did.
Yeah. Yeah. It was good.
Yeah. I thought it was funny when they were introducing Trevor on the show. The guy was like, yeah, I brought my buddy with me who, like, this whole thing is about a junkyard challenge. There's nobody that knows junkyards better than this guy here. And I was like, that's a good way of describing Trevor.
Oh yeah. There's no way. Definitely. Yeah. That was mellow. And definitely Trevor knows his thing, his combinations. Yes. Like I know Toyotas, he knows Jeeps and Chevys and Dodges and other stuff.
Yes.
But he is a book of that stuff. So
yeah,
we knew what we were doing when we went down there and what we were going to do. We had a whole plan. as they gave us a budget of, I think it was another couple thousand dollars to buy parts, just cash parts that we were allowed to buy from the internet or random. And then the rest was shocks and tires, all donated from sponsors. So we got the shocks from, I think it was Fabtech or someone like that, or Radflow.
Okay.
And tires from Toyo and nitrous systems from Summit, like all sorts of stuff that was just part of the show.
Yeah.
So we got all that stuff for free or cheap, and then the rest was just random Summit parts and bolts and ends, and we had to buy all this stuff from WFO with our cash to get the parts to fix the truck. But yeah, I mean, it ended up working out really well.
There was a big controversy that happened episode 2 or 3, I think, with one of the other teams.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you want to get into that at all? Or
they were just sour from the very day we showed up. All the other teams, it was like we showed up to a parking lot to meet, you know, the first day at the place, and all the other guys, like, smiles on their face, laughing, you know, good time. That team showed up. They're all upset already, grumpy. I'm like, why are you here? You know,
I was gonna say, they didn't seem like they really wanted to be there. Dude, it was almost like they were being forced to be there throughout the whole time.
It felt. And they did know the producers because they are shop close by the shop.
Okay.
And because this was the first show, they were like asked to be on the show versus where our guy actually applied.
Yeah.
So I think we're only a couple of the teams even applied. The other two were asked.
Okay.
So I think us and Damage are the ones that applied.
Okay.
And the other two teams were like local shops that they knew could build something.
Yeah.
And they just weren't into it the same way we were. And they're all desert people, so they all try to run two-wheel drive the whole time and hate on four-wheel drive, but that's why we pulled them at every single event.
Yeah.
Because they would not, they had four-wheel drive and ignored it the whole time.
Yeah. That's funny.
This desert guy stuff. Pre-runners are better.
Right?
I'm like, yeah, dude, it's better, but I'm still faster, so it's not that much better. Like, it's smoother.
Yeah. That's kind of like, I went down to Baja. I took that thing to Baja, drove it down there, and then drove around Baja for 1,000 miles and drove it back. And that was an experience. Going through Whoops with the leaf springs and no bypasses, no reservoirs, regular 5125 Bilsteins and Fox 2.0s. And
that are upside down.
Yeah. That are upside down.
Upside down now. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was, you know, I was down there with a guy who had a $150,000-$200,000 pre-runner, essentially, that was really well set up, and he would just fly down the Whoops. I'm sitting here going, oh my God, I hate my life for half an hour at a time.
Yeah, it's like getting seasickness riding the Whoops in a leaf sprung truck for that.
Yes.
Long. Yeah.
It was bad.
It's a good way to put it.
It was bad. Definitely. But I was just like, and there was at one point he kind of stopped to wait for me and then couldn't get going again because he's just two-wheel drive and it was soft stand right there. And I was like, well, I guess you'll catch up later, right? I was just kidding. I'll pull you out.
Four-wheel drive.
Yeah.
The silt down there is pretty bad. I've been wanting to take my truck, but I'm still not sure about going through Mexico with my truck without a whole bunch of people with me. It's too
sketchy. Definitely want to have a group. Like, I was impressed with how nice the each kind of border crossing, because there's like 3 or 4 of them you go through. You go through the main border crossing, and then between Nor and Sur, there's another crossing, and then there's a couple other checkpoints on your way down through there as well.
Yeah.
And they were all really cool. They you know, obviously, we were down there during the Baja 1000, so they were like, oh, yeah, there's trucks coming through the whole time, and all the pre-runners and all the chase vehicles are coming through. I think they were just having fun looking at them all. But I think if we were down there not during the Baja 1000, it would have been a little bit of a different story.
Yeah, that's what I hear from some people. I know the bigger race teams don't really have a problem. And all the ones I know, there's so many of them in there, and they got nice, you know, plain white trucks with all their stuff in enclosed trailers. Mm-hmm. So you're not really worried about it.
Yeah.
Me driving something fancy like that around with, you know, it's just not really that safe, especially if I don't speak the language very, you know, not very good at that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I want to go down and see the 1000 though someday.
Mm-hmm.
My goal is to drive it down there and like help pit for one of my buddies that does do it too.
Nice. So. It is a lot of fun. I'll give it that. It was definitely worth it going down there and sitting there 10 feet from the track as they're bombing through full throttle open out of a turn.
Oh, yeah.
It's 70, 80 miles an hour, you know, 100 yards, 200 yards out of this turn, and they're already up that fence. It was fun.
Yeah, high horsepower, badass toys for sure.
Yeah.
Goals.
Uh-huh, yeah. So cool. Did you have anything else, Jimmy, you wanted to ask or inquire about?
No, I'm just, I mean, thanks for all the info that you've provided for everybody. Congratulations on another build. I think we're all excited for this. It's it's pretty amazing what you were able to turn around so quick. And I know Tyler drove, you guys went out on your little test drive and Tyler came back into the shop and he was grinning ear to ear as he was parking, you know, and I don't even think the sub's hooked up.
No, so, no I music know, right now.
Yeah. No music
just
yet.
The pure exhaust
he sounded a little bummed when I told him that wasn't hooked up anymore. But I think once he gassed it, he got over it.
Yeah, definitely. Right. The little throttle noise. He's going to be blipping the throttle as he goes home.
So I would too. Definitely. It sounds pretty good. So,
yeah.
So
thank you, man, so much.
Yeah,
you're really welcome. Cool. Feel free, we can cut this out if you don't want to, but if people want to get a hold of you to ask you questions, anything like that about maybe they've got a 3-4 swap or some other stuff that going on that they want to know, or they want to hear some stories about some of your other builds or some more information about your Tacoma or your ship boxes in the back, how would people do that? How do they get ahead of you?
Instagram is probably the best. Okay. 83 Ricky Bobby.
Nice.
Just DM me or whatever. I don't really mind if I don't get back to you. It's just because I'm busy as hell. But I'll try to answer questions when I get them, you know, as long as they're not too ridiculous and too long. I mean, that kind of thing. It gets a little crazy sometimes.
Keep it short.
Everybody wants to know everything about what their Toyota swapper, as much information as they can. But
well, Jimmy has that issue. Jimmy's now gotten to the point where he does let me Google that for you. Have you heard of that?
No, I haven't.
Oh, it's fantastic. So people will just ask like random questions that are like, you can find the information out there pretty easily.
Oh yeah.
And there's a website that's LMGTFY. Let me Google that for you. Yeah. LMGTFY.
Yeah.
.com. And what it is, it comes up and you put in whatever question the person's asking you. And then the next screen that comes up is a video, or it gives you the link, right?
It gives you a Google link. And then you send that to the person.
Oh, right? Yeah.
And then they click on it. Like here's the answer I was looking for. And it's a video of a mouse moving over in front of the box.
The Google
box. Showing them how to type it.
Hitting submit or search. Yeah. And then it opens Google.
And it gives you all the Google.
Oh, my God. Yeah, so try to Google it before you ask me anything too dumb. But, you know, I do know
a buddy of mine calls it a GTS. If anybody asks him, he goes, GTS, man.
Google that shit.
Google that shit.
That's a good way. I'm going to have to remember that.
Yeah.
I start my own Google for Toyotas is what I need to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, cool. This has been awesome. Thank you so much for taking the time to sit down. I know you're busy. You've got two more solid axles. You've got probably the Tundra calling you right now. Where's my truck?
It's okay. We can ignore that for now.
There you go. Nice. Well, awesome, man. Anything else you wanted to get out there for anybody, or any final words of advice?
Thank you to ORS for making that harness. Yeah. It's pretty awesome in that crossover pipe. If you're really doing a 3-4 swap, I highly recommend it. It makes it way easier. I've done it both ways.
So it's Off-Road Solutions, ORS. Yeah.
Off-Road Solutions, man.
Second that. I called them and like I said, they were like, what do you got going on? I started explaining. Yeah. They're like, nope, stop. He said, take pictures.
Yeah.
Just show us what's there and we'll make it work. And I was like, okay. And I did it. And 8 weeks later, we got the harness and it all plugged in and worked perfectly.
Yeah. As long as you give them the correct information, it should be pretty smooth. And I just highly recommend it and stuff. Cool. And it works out good. And also a little thank you to WFO for all the stuff they did do to my truck to make it so cool. Cause I worked there and I built it with them, but you know, they could deserve some credit on it. Cause it's always getting likes by everybody constantly.
Yeah. Those guys are cool guys up there too. So
yeah, they help a lot, man. If you got questions for Jeeps and stuff, they're definitely the place to hit up, at least locally. They can do all that stuff.
Yeah. Awesome, man. So cool. Jimmy, do you have any final words for everyone?
St. Pauli's girl.
I don't understand that reference. Do you get it?
Yeah, I think so.
You think you do?
Yeah, I think I do. I think he needs a beer.
Oh, gotcha.
Oh, that one. Oh, yeah.
That's what you've been looking at this whole time.
Yeah, so he's been staring at her this whole time. I was like, what do you want, a beer? Oh, wait, the wall. I forgot. Yeah, there's a couple hotties on the wall.
That's, gotcha. That's okay. All. And with that, my friends, keep crawling.
I just saw my wife trip and fall while carrying a laundry basket full of ironed clothes. I watched it all unfold.
Okay.